This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning on ESPN Sports Radio 1300 and 92.5. Be a part of the show by tweeting Matthew at RealLauro5. Backspin Golf is brought to you by French Lick Resort and Casino, Men O' War Golf, Lexington Parks and Recreation, Clark's Pump and Shop, and Dan Cummins of Paris and Georgetown. Now let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf. It went
smack down the fairway. Good morning. Hey, it's Backspin Golf.
Well, it's 8:03 Sunday morning.
It's ESPN Sport. You're right, Sean? Sean had a major itch on the back of his shoulder. I'm just letting people know what's going on here, because it's you and me. We're the team. Perry French has been AOL.
Is it AOL?
No. AW. AW. Absent without leave. AWOL. He's been AOL. Well, it does. He hasn't been around very much. So I had a chance to catch up with him this past Thursday, a couple days ago, 3 days ago, whatever it is, from another wedge clinic that he is giving in the outer reaches of Kentucky. So here's my conversation with the great Perry French. Perry French. Perry French. Perry French. Perry French. Perry French. Do you like that, Sean? I added a little. Sean likes it. Joining me now. Yeah.
What? Was that the fairy tales do come true?
That's exactly
like that,
what it is. That's the song that I have pretty much always tried to start with my first two Perry Frenches. And
right.
I decided to let it go because both of us are nothing if not young at heart.
There you go. Okay, young at heart.
You know, exactly. It applies to me much more because I'm so much older than you are. It applies. Like for me, it's because of my age. That means young at heart means I'm acting 50. For you, yeah. It means you're acting 30 is basically something.
Thank you for that, but I'll take 40 at this
okay.
point.
All right, good. Hi, Perry French. Perry French, how you doing?
Hi, Matthew. Yeah, good.
The
golf season is turning along.
Yes. You are in beautiful Shelbyville, Kentucky. Is that correct?
I am. I am getting ready to have an event here at Weisinger Hills Golf Club this afternoon. After
nice.
Taping the show. And, yeah, so it's you know, dodging the rain. Hopefully it won't rain. But we're here to, you know, give everybody a chance to see the, you know, it's been a weird year, as we all know. And we don't normally do many days in July. So this will be interesting to see how people are still playing lots of golf.
Yeah.
And hopefully they're realizing they need some new equipment.
Yep.
And I'm here with Brian Sloan, the head golf professional and PGA Pro here. We're going to do a little wedge fitting and some club testing with a handful of his golfers. So
awesome.
It should be fun.
Well, and you and I still haven't found a time for me to get my new Cleveland wedges.
Well, yeah, we missed our hour or two last week at the Man of War. Our schedules are like
I know.
Me.
Ridiculous. But we'll get it done. Because I need it, frankly. You know me. I mean, and here's the thing, Perry. We always talk about practicing. And
mm-hmm.
I complain, if I could just chip from 20 yards, I would. I actually hit some balls. I went to Man of War. I chipped. I practiced. And, you know, towards the end, I felt like I was really chipping much better. Now we'll see this weekend. We'll see what happens.
It's amazing how that if you do it for like 15 or 20 minutes, you could develop some sense of feel and, you know, a little bit of understanding of what's happening. So
right.
That's the whole point in practice. So good. I'm glad you got out to do that.
Yeah. Here's part of my problem. I think I've explained it to you too. Not only me, but a lot of people, especially during this last 3 or 4 months when people for a long time, everything was closed. Golf courses, you couldn't go. You couldn't go even to Man of War for a little while before they reopened. And so we all watch videos. Like, I've watched 100 chipping videos. Everybody from Porrig Harrington to Jonathan Yarwood to this one, to that one, to this. And you go, oh, okay, that looks like something I could. Okay. And then I go out to play, and You know me. That I figured and that's the time to try something.
You've got 100
new
videos running. Yep. There's some great content out there. I think everybody, when they're taking the perusal of those videos from an interest, take it with a really wide grain of salt.
Right.
A large grain of salt. Just
right.
Look at it, see what makes sense, something that you can learn from it. But when you get out there and do it, you really, it's all about this. It's in the dirt scenario. You got to practice it and get a feel for it, what works for you. There's lots of ways, as we see it
right.
every week on tour.
Right.
Yes, there's a lot of similarities on the outside, how players stand and the such, but what they're trying to do with the club is much different from player to player. Some are more, less risky.
Yep.
Right, we'll go with Jason Day, very quiet, Steve Stricker, and then we got players like Phil that lock it, hold it, and keep it through the entire motion.
Right.
There's those two distinct moves. Those are about the same. Then you have the third element of the player who really kind of slightly moves the hands with the shot, and sometimes there's more hand speed, and sometimes there's less, depending on the length of the shot. So you have to develop a technique that fits for you, and I tell us in our West Coast, try to stay with a couple clubs you know.
Right.
You know.
Right.
No, really become best friends with your sand wedge and your gap wedge, or your sand wedge and your 9-iron, whatever club that you use in those shots. But the length becomes a low and running shot versus a long and a carry shot. You know,
mm-hmm.
you just change the loft that way. But don't get into changing technique. Surprisingly enough, the way you pitch a 9-iron or a pitching wedge from off the green 7-iron. With that motion is the same way you do that with the wedge. The only that changes differently is the loft of the shot and how much
right.
it rolls out. So don't change what you're doing in setup.
Change
and
the
motion.
Club.
Change the club. Yeah.
So,
and practice that different type of mechanism to work
mm-hmm.
and understand how the club works.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Which is why
we're
won't do
talk,
it.
We're talking about the probably the shot of the week was the story of the week as John Rahm came into the number one player in the world, but the shot of the week was the one you got penalized for.
Right. Well, and now here, we didn't, since you couldn't join me last week, and we haven't spoken this week, we did not get a chance to talk about John Rahm at the Memorial, and more importantly, the 16th hole where he chipped in for eagle and then was penalized afterwards. So before we get
right.
to how that shot from the rough, which I believe
mm-hmm.
is going to be your tip today.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I want to talk to you. You are a PGA professional. I'm one of the best. I said, I am on record. I said it a few times after the tournament. I 1,000% disagree with that penalty.
Right.
Because that is the rule that they put in to avoid exactly that penalty.
This is the worm cam scenario. The fact that the player, as he's setting the club down, well, yes, from the worm cam behind the ball, you can see where in the grass was, when the club sat down, the grass separated a little bit, and the ball moved towards that separation.
Moved a dimple.
How much did it? And under the rule of golf, the ball needs to change position.
Right.
So did it roll, change position, and wobble back? Right. That's the. And then to your other point, the other rule of golf is, we can't be going back and penalizing players in a situation where it's not discernible whether that happened. The player cannot tell that.
Right.
There's no way he could sit there looking at that shot and when the club sits down to see if that ball moved that little, whatever you want to call it, narrow,
right.
to the right and cause him to be penalized. And, thank goodness, that it didn't cost him the tournament, because at that point, that shot right there, as much as that 5-8 shot lead was dwindling to a 4-shot lead, and then down to a 3-shot lead, could have easily gone to almost, he could have given up two shots.
Two
there.
Or one, yep. right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, typically as hard as that shot was, and I can't imagine how hard that shot was.
Yeah.
With the speed of the greens, how hard that goes.
He said it's the best chip he's ever hit. And he's
there
hit some
go.
Pretty good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but the key to playing that shot, and he's a Seve, and I know you love that, he's a Seve.
Yep.
Admirer, his mentor, his idol, and look at the second only Spaniard to become world number one.
John Rahm is the second Spaniard,
yeah.
only one since Seve to be ranked number one in the world.
Right. So the shot he hits is really, it's a highly skilled shot,
mm-hmm.
but it's one that when you're playing and you're not playing maybe Memorial, but you're playing your home course.
Right.
And you have the ball that comes off the green, it overshoots the green. If there's, you know, you pulled it left, you got a little lucky on that shot, by the way. You know, if he was a little short, it'd run in the water, right?
Yeah.
But it bounds over the green. He's got the short side from the back side, which is always the toughest. And because typically the green's going to go down and run away from him. So I figured at best he could hit a really good shot and probably have a 10-footer.
But
then a heck of a shot.
That would have been great.
Yeah, so he literally perfed the shot, and what he did was, as was told, by the way, the club sat down, he used the grass to create a buffer for the club to slide into that shot, much like you would use if you were playing a bunker shot.
Right.
So when that ball is sitting down, and it was sitting down not all the way to the bottom, but certainly below the top of the grass level.
Yeah,
he was going to, the way you play that is everything's set up like it's a bunker shot. Just imagine everything that was around him was just a bunker, sand.
Right.
And all he did was he laid the club in, and it got in behind the ball, you know, somewhere between an inch or two, working the club outside in and sliding it underneath the ball with just the most subtle and quietest of hands, and just to drip that ball out of the, and just drop it onto the collar and then dribble it towards the hole perfectly. I mean, it's a shot that, like you said, he called it one of the best he's ever made. You know, if he gets it fairly close and the ball lands on the green a couple of feet, he probably rolls 7 or 8 feet by.
At least.
Through the green,
right.
Maybe more.
Right.
So he did. He had to land it on the fringe. He did that perfectly, and then it just released and then goes in the hole for a Tiger Woods-esque shot.
Yes.
And credit to Chris Woods, has been known to do that. He held out quite a shot there on 16 a few years ago. And the last time he won the Memorial, from a further to the low and to the right, but an amazing shot nonetheless. So play that shot like it's a bunker shot. Use the turf to cushion the impact and engage the bounce. That's the bottom of the golf club,
right,
where the club gets sliding and slides underneath the ball. I almost want to say it's almost like you're trying to whiff the ball. You're trying to go underneath it. You just don't want club face and ball contact. Otherwise, it comes screaming out of the air.
I'm familiar with that one. With that
right.
shot.
But the motion is definitely, you have to get the golf club coming outside and across the ball, so it's a sliding motion.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of liken it to the old ping pong shot where you're trying to get that touch shot
with
your
spin.
Hand is sliding.
Right.
With spin, exactly,
yep.
And a very glancing blow, and he executed to the max, and as it turned out, you know, gets penalized for the movement of the ball, and then
but
it's a
here,
four instead
here's
of a two.
The, yeah, but here's the thing, Perry. Here's the thing. We saw what happened with Dustin Johnson, and he didn't lose the tournament either, thank goodness. But
right.
They put the rule in that you cannot use technology. They don't want people calling in anymore and say, so when you have a camera behind the ball and you're an inch away from it and you slow it down the way they did, that was what the intent of the new rule was, to not do that.
It's very disturbing. Slugger White was on TV to explain the rule after during the telecast. And, you know,
it was ridiculous.
Kind of tried to stay matter-of-factly with it, but there's no matter of fact. Randall Chamblee was the one who really diagnosed the rule and went on there and told everybody about the previous rule that was put in place in 2018 to avoid that very noise of how the player doesn't know where he stands.
Right.
You know, if that goes in for the two net, then he makes a four, but he gets penalized and doesn't know it. He's only got a one shot lead on that one, as opposed to a three shot lead.
And he's still thinking. You know? I can make bogey on 17 or 18 and still win when he couldn't.
There was two holes to play.
Right.
And at that golf course,
at
the way it was playing, there was a double bogey lurking on every hole.
Right.
So, just, again, the wrong shot, double bogey birdie swing was definitely available at even as well as round play. He had the hiccup in the middle of his round.
Yeah.
Missed the drive, and then it, You know, misplayed the shot with hitting in the creek.
Yeah,
made a double bogey, then a bogey the next hole. So he lost what, four shots in five holes right off the giddy up, back nine.
Yeah,
and that was pretty indicative of how the golf course was playing.
Right.
I think the stroke average was like 75.
It was over 75.
It was playing U.S. Open S type.
Condition. And that's why. That's why his performance, he really should have been 11 under, not 9 under. was so impressive because that's like shooting 11 under at a U.S. Open.
Right, right. So. And so kudos to him. And,
yeah.
And he's a hell of a player. We know that. He has won. He's been since he came out. His fourth win on the PGA Tour, four consecutive years now with a win.
Yeah.
I think he's got five other European Tour wins. So,
and he's only 25.
Major.
Right.
Next up brings the major.
Major.
And, and look out for that to happen this year. I think we've got three upcoming, and
yeah,
I would not be surprised if he doesn't crown take one of those at least.
Yep. All right. Before we let you go, got a couple of minutes. We always talk about how difficult golf is, even for the best players in the world. What the heck is going on with Dustin Johnson? What I mean, last week at the Memorial, he completely blew up, and then we're speaking on Thursday, which is the first day of this 3M tournament. And this morning, I'm watching Get Up, and they had Josh Duhamel, the actor, who's from Minnesota, and he played nine holes with Dustin Johnson yesterday. He's doing a lot of charity work, Josh Duhamel, and blah, 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 and all.
Right.
So he comes on, and they say, how did Dustin play? And he went, oh, boy, he made a nine on 18 today. Yeah. And I thought, first of all, you shouldn't have said that on national TV, number one. And then he goes out and shoots seven over today. I mean, what is going on with him? Is it? I think it's Paulina. I think he's having trouble at home. That's the only explanation I can think.
I certainly don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah.
But my guess would be it's a tough game, and he's at a spot where, you know, this layoff has maybe affected him and to the point where his – you know, concentration's not right, and you know the golfers they play. You make a mistake, and then make a bad mental mistake. And I think these are more mental mistakes than physical,
right?
Because these players don't make nines; they make, you know. Let's go back to DeChambeau making 10. That was a complete mental mistake. What kind of second shot was he trying to hit there?
Yeah,
it was totally a mental mistake. He did it twice.
Right.
He did it a third time. I mean,
yeah.
This was. I think they're looking at this almost like, as you were saying in the film, I listened to you yesterday, this is not exhibition. This is preseason, right?
Right.
This is preseason stuff.
Yeah.
They're just trying to get the kinks out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're losing interest in some of those things that are going on. And it's causing them to be, just like we do experience in our rounds, we lose concentration.
Right.
We get off it for a couple, you know, how many times do you have a conversation? Well, I parred three holes in a row, then I bogeyed the next six.
Yeah.
Couldn't make a par.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard that done
from
it,
me
know?
A
it's
lot.
Like I was off to a great start, and then what the heck happened? I hit one on the bounce, and next thing you know, I couldn't hit a shot.
Yeah,
you got off track.
Yep.
You know that's your concentration wanes, and this game is that fragile, and certainly at the highest level, it's just as fragile. And that's I think it's a what's the toughest 6 inches in golf is the space between your ears.
That's correct. All right, before I let you go, hi Christmas, Carol.
Hi, Christmas, Carol, for
next
sure.
On the tee, greatest podcast ever, podbean.com. All right, have fun today. I hope you don't get rained on, and we'll talk to you next week.
Talk to you soon.
All
thanks,
right.
Buddy.
See ya.
Bye.
Perry French. All right, coming up, the great, iconic, part two of Jerry Foltz and I speaking. The iconic part, Sean, is not the interview. It's Jerry Foltz. He's iconic. Got it? All right, we'll be back. It's Backspin Golf, ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Man O' War Golf, the golf improvement experts.
Joining me now for part two of the brilliant appearance he made last week, which was part one. I couldn't wait any longer this week. I had to speak to Jerry Foltz again because I was incensed yesterday. And my first thought is, who do I know that knows the most about golf? And Jerry Foltz popped into my head. Hi, Jerry Foltz.
You really need to expand your horizons.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. The same as when you're on the course covering stuff, there's nobody I'd rather have explaining things to me than you. Well, my friend Dottie Pepper is close. Let's put it that way. But other than the two of you,
praise.
I'm done with all of them. I know it'd be hard, but I wish you and Dottie could cover every golf tournament.
Well, Dottie was there yesterday with
that final group in the memorial.
Yeah.
She was. She actually had a great line. She usually does. But see, now we have you, and you don't have to comment on this, but I'll comment on it. I even have an opinion about the way they're doing that. There are so many in the telecast voices coming at us now that it's like Ian Baker Finch asks Dottie a question, and she says four words to start to answer, and then Ian starts talking again, and it's just me. It's because you're my friends, and I just want to hear you guys.
in their defense, right now it's unusual broadcasting circumstances, yeah. And Nick and Frank Nobilo and Ian Baker Finch are all in Orlando. Dottie is there, and there is that awful pregnant pause delay between the two cities, and that has created a lot of talking over each other. And as well as they know each other, you know they'll iron it out in time, but... That's something that we had to really, the two tournaments I've done with a similar situation were a Korn Ferry Tour event in Utah from here in Orlando, and then on the ground at the TaylorMade Driving Relief.
Right.
And you have to figure out a system of when you're supposed to talk and they're supposed to talk. Mark Gilman had the same problem. I mean, he was talking over those guys all day long and vice versa. So it's just a tough situation to put them in right now.
Yeah, it is. And you're just such a nice guy. I just want him to stop. I don't care how they do it. Just stop. That's all.
Anyway.
All right. Here's where I want to start with you. So yesterday, we're watching the memorial. And John Rahm played one of the more spectacular tournaments that we've seen in a long time because of the conditions, the golf course, the pin placements, blah, 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 blah. And then he gets to 16. He's got a ball that nobody can see unless you have a camera zoomed in on it and have slow motion going. And he chips in on 16 for an eagle, which effectively wins the golf tournament for him and moves him to number one in the world. All of that. And then a little while later, here it comes. Wait, the ball moved. And then we have Nick Faldo saying, two dimples and then one dimple. Here's my question. And they eventually, Slugger White and those guys, it's a good thing he had a cushion. If he were one shot up, Jerry, and they had called the two-shot penalty on that, I'm done with golf. That's my opinion. I thought we covered this. Didn't they change the rules?
They did. They changed the rules and the decisions to reflect the naked eye test. So a situation exactly like that would never happen again. And lo and behold, it happened. And it said, I know Brandel Chamblee thinks, it sets a horrible precedent moving forward because that was the purpose of the rule. We'd seen way too many call-in rules infractions that the player had no idea they had made, as was the case with John Rahm yesterday. And I was shocked when I heard that Slugger had assessed the penalty, and I can only speculate that the reason he did is because it didn't matter. And it was the easiest and quickest way to put it behind them so that John Rahm could go take the pictures with Jack and all the pomp and circumstance to follow at a tournament like that. That's the only reason I could think, because I think if they got together, they made a few calls to Far Hills, New Jersey, home of the USGA, if they needed to, for consultation, they would have deemed that to be exactly what that new rule was written for and no penalty. And I hope that the next time it arises that that is exactly how they deem it. So it goes away. They've tried getting rid of call-in rules infractions and this and that. And we get the exact same thing yesterday, something that probably happens hundreds and hundreds of times during the course of a golf tournament when a player grounds his club, allowed in the rules, behind the ball in the rough, and that ball and gravity takes over to a small degree. And never, when gravity takes over, does the lie get better.
Right.
It always gets worse.
Right.
So, but he happened to have a camera zoomed in on it, and now you got this whole, kerfuffle about whether that should be a penalty or not. He didn't see it. If a player thinks the ball may have moved, 9 times out of 10, they'll call a rules official, and the ruling is the same every time. The rules official will come over and say, I didn't see it. It's your call. If you think it moved, it's a two-shot penalty. If you think perhaps it didn't move, it's no penalty, but it's 100% your call, which that should have been yesterday.
Absolutely. And Brandel brought up a good point on the Golf Channel. He said normally when a player does that and he thinks a ball had moved, he stops. And
right.
what we saw was John Rahm do it three or four times. Clearly, three times he probably was looking at the hole when he put his club behind the ball. So I got kind of angry about it because, as you say, that's why they had changed that rule. Do you remember when a viewer called in about Craig Stadler years ago? I mean, years ago, that his ball was under a pine tree. And
yeah, Torrey Pines.
Yeah, and he took the towel and he knelt down on the towel and they said he was building a stance. And I remember thinking, and there was a whole big thing back then about viewers calling in to call penalties on people. And here we go yesterday. As I said, but even that, Jerry, okay, I'm not ready to let this go yet. It just because it didn't affect the outcome, that should not have factored into the decision at all. Do you know what
you're,
I mean?
You're absolutely right. And for rules to be fair, they have to be implemented blindly.
Correct.
By that I mean it should have no effect, whatever it means to the competition or to the competitor, that should have no effect on the assessment of the ruling. That's the only way, by definition, rules can be fair. The same for everybody at all times.
Right.
And I don't get the feeling that others would have been penalized for a situation like this if they were trying to make the cut, or perhaps they're, you know, one shot back or tied for the lead or something, because the rules allow for the rules officials in that exact circumstance to absolve him if he didn't see it move.
Because right.
there's no way anybody else would have seen it move. And even from above it, the ball moved so little that even if he were staring straight at it, I think there would have been very, very little question in his mind that it didn't move.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he would have stopped, like Brandel said. Now, typically, because we couldn't see his eyes at the time, typically when a player grounds a club behind the ball, they're looking there. Now, when the club comes up, that's when his eyes move to his
right.
landing spot and to survey the shot, and then it goes back down with his eyes there. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, players do that 2, 3, 4 times. Sergio in his weak times did it 100 times.
Yeah.
but they do it, and it's part of their address routine. So we don't know where his eyes were looking, but even if his eyes were looking at it, I don't know. I just don't know if he would have seen that move, because we had such a close-up view of it. I mean, we were 6 inches away from the ball with that, basically, that lens angle.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's 6 feet away from it. So I just can't. And if he did see it move, Brandel's absolutely right. Your instinct, especially in that situation, your instinct is to just stop
mm-hmm.
and then ask Adam, his caddy, did you see that move? And Adam
right.
would have told him, point blank, if he saw it move.
Yeah.
And then if you're still a question in your mind, you call over the rules official, and then they tell you the exact same thing I said. It's
yep.
100% your call.
Well, now, we had a rules official called over during this tournament on Friday when my new favorite player, the Hulk, as we've discussed last week, had a meltdown on a hole where a par 5 where he made a 10. And first of all, what's the highest score you've ever made on a hole, do you think?
I made an 11 once, ran out of golf balls. I had to walk through a lake in Scottsdale and retrieve a golf ball out of the water to finish the hole. And the last two holes had water as well, so that was the 16th hole. I was pretty scared.
Yeah, but that shows, I've always said, if not for your injury, you would have been number one in the world. That shows...
Well,
your mindset when you had to go in the water to get a ball because you ran out and play the last two holes with water hazards, and you did it. That's what
I'm
talking about.
I had two number ones on that hole. They just happened to be side by side.
Okay. Anyway, so Bryce Epps over there hits one out of bounds, drops two balls. They were talking about if those drops were legal. And then takes a 3-wood and tries to muscle it out, hits two more out of bat, does what he does. And I just sat there watching it and thought, if he could do that every week, I would watch him all the time. That's how I feel. Because otherwise, I really don't. You know, I'm glad he wasn't there for the weekend. I know a lot of people are enjoying what he's doing, and I'm not disrespecting him for the hard work he put in. It's just, you know, I mean, he had to call the rules official over, and I thought he was going to hit him with the golf club when he told him it was out of bounds.
Yeah, he wasn't too nice to him, and he questioned him. And that rules official is a guy named Dave Donnelly, who came to the tour about 12, 15 years ago from the USGA as part of their rules staff, which basically means he is 100% an expert and scores 100% on every rules test. He knows them all. Now, that is one of the most basic rules in the game that he was in. You know, he was telling him what the ruling was. The ball was clearly out of bounds by 3 or 4 inches.
Right.
And he really didn't treat him very well. Matter of fact, as soon as they went away from that, I sent Dave Donnelly a text that I can't read to you or share with you.
That's fine.
And his response was equally colorful.
Oh, come on, Jerry. You could tell us.
Next time over a beer, I'll show it.
Okay. Yeah, save it. Don't delete it. All right. Now, we got about 3 minutes left. Next week, right, for you, you're back to work?
Yeah, I leave a week from today or tomorrow, driving to Toledo from Orlando.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Here's my question. Who is going to supervise Karen with all the work that needs to be done there? Or is she going with you?
Yeah, she's going to. Well, we worked the first week together.
Oh, good.
And then she's doing the Women's U.S. Amateur the very next week, and I'm staying in Toledo. We have two tournaments there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I am driving over to pick her up in Maryland, and then we're going to drive home. So, she'll probably do a lion's share of the driving on the way up just to keep those motor skills sharp. You got to keep those motor skills sharp.
You know what I love? Yeah. Everything that you do is for her benefit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's how you have to be. You know, you have to be thinking of everybody else. You can't just, you know, make decisions for yourself.
Maybe this is where I've been going wrong. It always helps. It always helps me to talk to you. So what is next week? Which tournament is that in Toledo, first one?
Yeah, it's a drive-on challenge, much like the Workday one that they played last week at Memorial or the week before. The LPGA put together a tournament on basically their own dime with help of some other sponsors just to get a playing opportunity for their players who've been starving, essentially. And they, you know, most of them, not all, but a lot of them anyway, don't have the nest egg to rely upon that so many of the PGA Tour players have just based on the disparity in economics between men's and women's sports. So another playing opportunity for them. And then the following week will be the first, you know, regular, I guess, LPGA event, the Marathon Classic, right there in Toledo as well. And they just made the decision. They were going to be allowed to have fans. I think they should, but they're going to go without fans just out of, the most popular phrase in the world these days is out of an abundance of caution.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, I'm a little upset because I was kind of counting on you to be a co-host of mine every week now because, you know, I would text you and say, can you talk to me at 3? And you'd go, I don't know, let me check my schedule. Now you're busy. Now you got stuff going on. I'm a little, but I'm happy for you. Let's just say that.
It'll be great to get back to work and to see all the friends I have out there with the LPGA and see the great players at it again because the men have kind of stolen the stage the last 6-7 weeks and it's their turn.
Well, we've talked about this. I love, and so many of us do, watching the LPGA and women's golf. It's in a lot of ways it's a lot more fun for us to watch that, and you get to do it up close.
You're not going to get a Bryson story out there, somebody who puts on 20 30 40 pounds and gets applauded for it. That's for sure. They'll be snickered about on social media left and right, even if they added 30 yards. So but their skills, I think, equate much more to the recreational golfer. And I think any golfer who plays golf for fun can learn a lot more watching the women.
Absolutely.
Watch them kind of, you know, pick apart a golf course as opposed to a bomb and gouge like Bryson, which none of us will ever be able to do.
Yeah. Well, I still have a little bit of time left. I just started this week. I'm training really hard. All right. Be safe. Tell Karen we said hi, and I'll check in with you along the way. I'll be texting you during the tournament. Okay.
I love it. Text me words to work in. I always like that challenge.
Okay. I will. All right. Thanks, pal.
Take care.
See ya.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Edwin Watts Golf.
Welcome back. Backspin Golf, ESPN Sports Radio, 1300 and 92.5. And joining me now, one of my favorite people and one of my favorite topics in all of sports, which is qualifying. trying to qualify for a PGA Tour event and all that goes into that. And the guy that brings that all to life for us, as I say every time, is Ryan French. You can follow him on Twitter at A Case of the Golf One, the number one, Monday Q Info. And he talks about Monday qualifying, developmental tours, all kind, anything that's involved in trying to get to the PGA Tour. Wow. Hi, Ryan French. How are you?
Matthew, how are you? As always, I say it every time I'm on. Thank you. The first radio show I was ever on was this show, and it I appreciate all your support and happy to be on.
Well, and as I always say, well, yeah, that's great. But you know what? I'm looking at your Twitter feed, buddy. 38.3 thousand followers, Sean.
It's pretty crazy.
I mean, obviously, this is about you. I mean, I'm glad I had you on first, but this is about you. It's not, although I usually, Sean, I always take credit for stuff like this, don't I?
Yeah. I mean, take some, for sure.
I will. I'm going to tweet that out. If it wasn't for me, Ryan French would be nothing. all right. You, as always, you have so many things on your Twitter feed to talk about. I want to start with, this is from yesterday, and you say the things you don't see. Is his name Ross Miller?
Or it is, yep.
Okay. Ross Miller is a player none of us, I think, have. I certainly haven't heard of him. Can you explain a little bit about this story? And this shows exactly what you're talking about all the time. Tell us about Ross Miller.
Yeah, I mean, Ross has a really good story even to start. So Ross has kind of grew up in a small Minnesota town, really didn't have the usual background that some golfers have.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, he got through pre-qualifying at Q School. And he literally did not. So when you get through pre, you pay about $2,000 to get into pre-Q. And then if you get through, you have to pay an additional like $2,500 to
wow.
move on to first stage. He did not have any money and literally opened up a credit card and maxed it out in order to get to first stage, and then got through first stage, second stage, all the way to final stage. So Ross has a good story anyway, but he finished down at final stage, so he didn't have good status. Tried to play in the Monday qualifier this week, didn't get through, and was like 10 or 12 out of getting in the event. So he drove home to Minnesota about 9 hours.
So he wasn't going to be an alternate, is what you're saying.
Right, he was like 12 alternate,
right.
So really
okay.
no chance, no reason to stick around.
Right. Okay.
By the time he got home, it came to Wednesday. He had moved up to third alternate, then second, and then Wednesday night he was first alternate.
Oh my
lord! At 11 o'clock at night, he got back in his car, drove all the way through the night to get back to Missouri. 9 hours. Got in at like 5:15. Went to an Anytime Fitness, showered, stretched, and went to the course at 6 a.m. and waited for, hopefully, a withdrawal. That didn't happen. So sat there all day hoping for a withdrawal. It didn't happen. We all know that Tony Romo withdrew after four holes. But,
right.
So sat there all day, didn't get in, got back in his car, and drove to the Dakotas to play in a Dakotas Tour event, which is 8 hours, got in at 11 o'clock last night, and teed off at 9 this morning in a mini tour event. So,
do we know how he did today?
I didn't. I actually was about to send him a message, so I'll send him a message and see.
Okay, cool.
Hopefully he just stayed awake. That would probably have been a good goal.
I mean, as you said, he has no sleep in basically 36 hours, and then he's trying to do something in this mini tour event. This is exactly the kind of thing you talk about and highlight so well. And I'll just say this. I have no problem with Tony Romo announcing. I hate him because he's a Dallas cryboy. But I hate him now because if he had just said before he teed off, my wrist hurts, and then Ross Miller would have gotten in. He should have withdrawn.
Yes.
Oh.
I mean, he should have withdrawn a week ago when he was hurt, and
right.
then
Right.
You know, the charity could have given the sponsor's exemption to someone else.
Yeah.
Or, yes, he could have withdrawn after he tried to hit it on the range. So it's unfortunate, but Ross is a really good dude, has been super nice to me, and I'm rooting for him for sure to make it back.
I will too, and I'm adopting this story, and I'm going to follow Ross Miller, because this is exactly what you're so great at, is bringing all these stories to us. So
I think, Matthew, as you know from following it, it's just there's a lot of side of pro golf that people just don't know. They don't see that. That's not covered on TV.
Of course.
No one's going to talk about Ross Miller driving, you know, back and forth and missing Monday qualifiers, but it happens weekly, and there's a first alternate every week. And, you know, it's just a side of golf that should be known, because I think people think of pro golf as elitist, and there's a lot of stories that are anything but.
The exact opposite, actually. That's what they are. Something else I want to talk to you about, that there's a million things, but is the Colorado Open. You did something about the Colorado Open, which most people don't even know. What tour that is? That on any kind of regular tour?
No, it's just the State Open from Colorado.
State Open. All right. Like we have the Kentucky Open here. Duh. Okay.
Correct.
I've told you. I'm an idiot. Anyway, this Colorado Open, though, there's $100,000 to the winner. And this field, I guess because there's so little golf being played for so many of these professional golfers, there are numerous PGA Tour winners, you say. A great, interesting field, an LPGA star, developmental tour legends, and others. Tell us about the Colorado Open.
Yeah, I mean, the Colorado Open is the State Open. You know, Neil Johnson has become a friend of mine and a co-host on a podcast that I have. And you know, he won the Colorado Open in 2016. And it's really funded his career for a long time.
Wow.
So, you know, this can really keep guys going for a couple, 3 years. So you see tons of guys make their schedule around this. And like you said, you know, the Champions Tour isn't going yet. It's going to go next week. And there's no Latin America or Canada. So everybody's out at the Colorado Open. I mean, Chris DeMarco is there. He has 3 PGA Tour wins.
Yeah.
Jonathan Kay is there. He has 2. Grant Waite's there. Jennifer Kupcho, who's an LPGA star, is playing. Obviously, she's trying to get ready for the season too. So it's always a very good field. It's another step up this year. It's a very cool field for sure.
Jennifer Kupcho, for our listeners, is an NCAA champion 1 year, I believe. Led her team to the NCAA championship the year before, the year after she won that. Is that right? And now is on the tour. And did she win the first Augusta women's tournament?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
See,
yep.
I surprise myself with what I remember.
Yeah, I mean, she's had as decorated as, you know, I mean, a very decorated amateur career. She's played well. She's won a couple of women's all-pro tours. Good developmental tour. She's won a couple of those leading back to the season. So yeah, it's a very interesting, great field. And as you know, Matt, I always like tournaments that change guys' career life. And this really can do that. It's very rare on the developmental tour level to have $100,000 to the winner. And pro golf is super, super expensive. And so I'm always rooting for guys who, you know, need money, and $100,000 can keep their career going for a couple, 3 years.
Could keep my career going for a couple of 3 years. And I don't even play on the tour. I'm just saying.
Right.
Okay. And one other that I want to talk to you about, obviously the Korn Ferry Tour is the highest tour right before the PGA Tour. But when you put something on your Twitter account that says there is an insurance salesman in the Korn Ferry Tour field, I'm interested right away. And Kyle Thompson, you tell a little story about Kyle Thompson. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle, I say insurance salesman, tongue in cheek, because yeah. he truly is an insurance salesman, but he does have five career Korn Ferry wins. He spent a few years on the PGA Tour, but yeah he sells insurance full time, and got into this tournament based on the past champion status and decided to give it a go just because, you know, he could take a week off and go play some golf. But Kyle was the first pro golfer that I ever interviewed. I had 700 followers, and he sat down with me for, you know, a 45 minutes on the phone, and mm-hmm. has been always very good to me. So I give him a hard time / thank him for all that he's done for my account, for sure.
Well, all right. And finally, before I let you go, you talked about, I'm just looking at this and I'm going, what? Drinking hand sanitizer to stave off dehydration? What is that? Go ahead, explain that. Go on.
JJ Killeen is a guy ahead of my podcast. If you're not following on Twitter, you're missing out.
Yeah.
He's exactly what the platform was meant, in my opinion, to do. He laughs, gives good lessons, makes plenty of jokes, says whatever he wants to say.
Hold on. His name is it JJ Killeen? Is that his name?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
But his Twitter handle is West Texas Driving Range Pro.
Right. Yes, he's okay. Won two Korn Ferry events. He now owns a quote unquote driving range. It's called Four Golf, but so he calls himself the West Texas Driving Range Pro. But I had him on my podcast. He is hilarious, and the North Texas PGA section held a Monday qualifier and didn't put out any water because of COVID, but it was 105 degrees, and people were complaining, to say the least, and there was hand sanitizer every hole, so JJ made the joke that since there was no water, he was going to start drinking hand sanitizer to save himself.
All right, I just followed him, and I'm going to have him on the show now, too.
Yeah, he's awesome.
That's great. All right, you're, as we know from your Twitter account, you're picking cherries off of cherry trees up in Michigan. You're doing all kinds of stuff, and once again, it just shows you what a terrific guy you are, and you're not afraid to get your hands dirty.
Yes, I stayed in the cart and took some videos, so I try not to do too much physical labor. So
okay,
thanks, cool. Matthew, as always, for having me on and all your support. I can't thank you guys enough.
Well, it's because of how I feel about you. You're the best at what you do, and I'll talk to you real soon. You can be sure of that.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks very much, guys.
Take care.
All right.
Ryan French. I'm telling you, just follow him on Twitter. A case of the golf and the number one. All right, that'll do it. ESPN Sports Radio 1392.5. Thanks, as always, to all my guests and my incredible partners. Man of War Golf, I went over last night. I practiced, Sean. I did something I don't do enough. I practiced. And I want to thank my buddy Matt over there for giving me a few very helpful tips. Best practice facility anywhere. French Lick Resort, you know the deal. Two incredible golf courses, the casino and West Baden Hotel, are open, social distancing. Check it out. Go to the website, but get up there and play. Lexington Parks and Rec, of course. I'm on my way over to Kearney right now. Edwin Watts Golf, great deals going on. Dan Cummins in Paris and Georgetown, peeps. It's where I got my vehicle. My wife got her vehicle. Two of my friends got their vehicles there, too. Clark's Pump and Shop. Yesterday morning, 6:30, on my way out to Kearney, I stop every Saturday morning at Clark's Pump and Shop on Clay's Mill and get my coffee and some donuts, and I'm good. They're just great. Commonwealth Credit Union. My credit union. My wife's credit union. It's real community-based banking. No finer people than it's Commonwealth Credit Union and NFP. Go to nfp.org.com. Not .org, Sean. What are you talking about? nfp.com for everything you need in insurance they're my insurance people too. See, all my partners are people that I work with in my personal life, which is a great way to do it. Go see Michael Cunningham for any of your insurance needs. My car insurance was just up, and Shannon got a new car, and so it changed. They went through all these insurances and came up with a great deal for me. NFP.com. All right, we'll be back next week. It's ESPN Sports Radio, 1392.5.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence is sponsored by Lexington Parks and Recreation. Book your tee time at one of their five public courses at lexingtonky.gov. Play Golf Lexington.